This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Workers have not been paid. And if they should go on strike, workers will feel it more and government might not even feel anything out of it.
That is a voter in Abuja, Nigeria, talking about the strike that labor groups have suspended. Details coming up. Also, Haitians have mixed feelings about the prospect of an international police force led by Kenyan forces. And Ghana's opposition National Democratic Congress took to the streets to protest worsening economic conditions. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Members of Ghana's major opposition National Democratic Congress took to the streets in the capital Accra today to protest what they allege is mismanagement by the governor of the central bank, the high cost of living and high inflation. It follows a three-day protest held last week over the lingering economic crisis in the West African country. Kent Mensah reports from Accra on calls for Ernest Addison's resignation.
Clad in red and black, colors signifying a state of sorrow in Ghanaian culture, hundreds of protesters chanted revolutionary songs and carried placards bearing inscriptions such as, "President Akufo-Addo is wicked. We cannot buy medicine. We are dying. Save Ghana now and fix the country." Dubbed Occupy BOG protest, the protesters demanded the resignation of the governor of the central bank, Ernest Addison, over hyperinflation in the West African country. Heavily guarded by riot police, the demonstrators accused the head of the treasury of overprinting money to fund the government's alleged profligacy that has led to economic hardship. The BOG is the Bank of Ghana. Kasala Tufosen is the minority leader in parliament.
This Akufo-Addo government, together with the governor, hasn't been fair to the people of Ghana. In fact, Governor Addison printed for President Akufo-Addo. For them to live a champagne lifestyle can't continue this way. Ghanaians are struggling, finding it very difficult to survive. In fact, some are struggling to eat three times in a day. We want this government out.
Ghana, a major exporter of gold and cocoa, is steadily recovering from its worst economic crisis after agreeing to $3 billion in IMF relief support. Inflation has been on a decline, hitting a 10-month low in August at 40.1% from 43.1% in July. Protesters, however, say the cost of living is still too high. Reverend Sebastian Akpalu of Christ Kingdom Worldwide Ministries was one of the protesters.
The president is not listening to us.
Really?
Yes, the system is very difficult. There's no money in the system. There's hardship. There's no. I give money to people. Even today, I'll give money to people to get some food to eat. Are you getting me? I pay people's school fees. So what again? We cannot carry gun. We will not need to carry cutlass and things. We have to talk to you. A leader must listen to the people.
Government officials declined VOA's request for an interview on the issue. Daniel Mate Enim, an economist with the Accra-based Policy Initiative of Economic Development Africa, said the government must reduce expenditures and focus on policies that will create jobs to alleviate the plight of the ordinary Ghanaian.
We must ensure that we mobilize domestic revenue and minimize our expenditure, cut down the size of government. So let's focus and have a coordinated policy that will ensure that we anchor the economy. That is done, jobs will be created, and also the economy will bounce back.
The World Bank in July projected that Ghana's economy would grow by 1.5% this year, adding that growth will expand by 2.8% in 2024. The projections fall short of the 3.1% of growth reported in 2022. Kent Mensah, VOA News, Accra.
Thank you. organized labor in Nigeria has suspended a planned strike to compel the government to implement their earlier agreements. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, asked some residents for their views.
The Nigeria Labour Congress, the NLC, and the Trade Union Congress had planned to start an indefinite strike on Tuesday if the government failed to meet their demands for pay raises and other interventions to cushion the hardship brought about by the removal of the fuel subsidy. This public servant, who gave her name as Rhoda, is disappointed with the decision to suspend the strike.
It's so annoying. I just feel they are just so cheap. 35,000 naira, what would 35,000 naira do for any civil servant in Nigeria now? People are dealing with a whole lot.
The government had agreed to a pay raise of 35,000 naira, or about $44 for federal civil servants, starting last month to coincide with a new national minimum wage that had been signed into law. Another public servant, Simeon, thinks labor leaders should have asked for the raise to be retroactive, starting with June, right after the fuel subsidy was ended.
To some extent, it's a mixed feeling for me, in the sense that we really expected more than the 35,000 that they offer. But then, at least they can collect the little that they've been offered and keep on struggling.
Ladi, a housewife, says union leaders took the right decision to call off the strike.
You know, to a large extent, I think NLC, they've just been tactical about this issue. Look, workers have not been paid. And if they should go on strike, workers will feel it more and government might not even feel anything out of it.
Businessman Badu is worried how government promises would be fulfilled.
The call off of the strike is good for the country. However, will the resolution be enough for what the labor union are asking for? Of course, I expect the palliative to cut across every sector of the citizen.
The government has made commitment to pay 25,000 naira, or about $31 a month, for 3 months, starting in November, to 15 million households, including vulnerable pensioners. It also plans to increase the subsidized fertilizer distributions to farmers. This is VOA News in Abuja, Nigeria.
The United Nations Security Council has approved a resolution to authorize a multinational force to Haiti, led by Kenya, to help combat violent gangs that have overwhelmed police. Haiti asked for an intervention force a year ago, but neither the United States nor the UN were willing to lead one. Kenya stepped up in July with an offer to lead a multinational force. VOA Creole Service Chief Sandra Lemaire spoke with reporter Anthony Labruto about the reaction to the planned force in Haiti.
There is mixed reaction in Haiti in the same way that there's mixed reaction that we heard from Kenyans. You know, people realize that they need a multinational force to come in and help them deal with the gangs because the government has been unable to, the national police force has been unable to. But, you know, they're very skeptical because of the UN force that was in Haiti, which left in 2017, which, you know, left them with cholera and child rape and, you know, fatherless children. And, you know, they were accused of some abuses. So, you know, people realize that they need the force, but, you know, on the other hand, they're skeptical about it. Haiti is a very complicated place, and the gang situation is a very complicated one. I've never been to Kenya, so it's hard for me to give you an equivalent of, you know, what it's like where the gangs, like, have their stronghold. But I can compare it to a catacomb where it's like a web of different places. There are a lot of places to hide. These people have huge weapons that, you know, are brand new, and they're comparable to some of the things that law enforcement in the United States has. So there are a lot of opportunities for ambushes and things like that. Obviously, I'm sure that the Kenyan police force is very adept and very skilled, But I don't think that it's going to be a very simple operation because the gangs have really taken over 80% of the capital.
That was Sandra Lemaire, the head of VOA's Creole service. She spoke to VOA's Antonila Bruto. As we just reported, the Kenyan government says it is ready to send 1,000 members of its police force into Haiti to help tamp down gang violence. While some Kenyans say it's a good idea, others are expressing concerns about the proposal. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Maria Madialo has the story.
Kenyans are divided on the issue of sending 1,000 members of its police force to help quell gang violence in Haiti.
There are countries much stronger than us who could have intervened first. Those criminal elements in Haiti, first of all, I think they don't need police. They need soldiers.
I think that the Kenyan police force is a force that we have. We have faith in it, and there's no reason why we should doubt their capacity.
The Kenyan government says Haiti's far-off location in the Caribbean isn't a deterrent.
We decided we are going to go and help Haiti.
Cabinet Secretary for Foreign and Diaspora Affairs Alfred Mutua recently announced Kenya is ready to lead the multinational police force.
We've got other African nations that are coming on board. We've got other nations from all the world. They're saying if Kenya is leading it, we think there's going to be success. So they're coming on board.
On a recent visit to Kenya, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin lauded the plan.
And we intend to work with the United States Congress to provide up to $100 million in support. And we urge others in the international community to follow Kenya's great example.
Austin was in Nairobi with his Kenyan counterpart, Adan Dwale.
Kenya has a very long history of global peacekeeping. We were in Kosovo, we were in Namibia, we were everywhere. We are now in Somalia, we're in DRC. We have our officers in the Tigray monitoring and evaluation mechanism.
But others, like former Kenyan Defense Secretary Eugene Wamalwa, disagree.
First of all, I mean, what interest would we have to be in Haiti as a third world country that is over 12,000 kilometers away, that many of our officers don't even understand, I mean, don't even know French or Creole in terms of even communicating with the Haitians? It would be a problem. And even in terms of training and preparation to engage in such a complex security situation where there's urban warfare with guns.
Vincent Kimosop is a Kenyan economist and policy analyst.
It's unprecedented. We only get to hear about Haiti if it is not natural disasters, the issues of insecurity, political instability. But, you know, the people who are in Haiti have an African descent. And we have an Ubuntu philosophy in Africa. I am because you are, and because you are, I am. Yeah. So when you remove the political, eventually a decision to go help a neighbor who is struggling will be loaded within a broader conversation in the African context.
Kimosop says he supports the administration's decision, but also believes the government should be more transparent and communicate more with the Kenyan public. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Nobel Peace Prize winning gynecologist Denis Mukwege said yesterday he will run for president in the Democratic Republic of Congo's December election. Mukwege, who won the award in 2018 for his nearly two-decade fight against sexual violence, made the announcement to supporters in the DRC capital, Kinshasa. The 68-year-old doctor has treated hundreds of war rape victims at the Panzi Hospital he founded in 1999 in the eastern DRC. Mukwege will be running against President Felix Tshisekedi, whose first term has been plagued with economic hardship, epidemics, and worsening insecurity in the East. Yesterday, Mukwege told VOA's Eddie Isango he was motivated to run in part because Congolese citizens have asked him to. He says he found it difficult to leave his comfort zone and launch into his new way of helping the Congolese people. But he said over the past year he saw that the situation in the country in terms of security, politics and society has deteriorated, so he decided to say yes to the call to run. Eswatini's Africa's last absolute monarchy says last week's legislative elections were a huge success and that 51 men and 8 women were elected as members of the lower house of parliament, which plays only as an advisory role to the king, to the monarch. King Maswati III, who has ruled for 37 years, will appoint 10 other members. South African opposition parties say they'll be heaping pressure on the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, to try to ensure democratic reform in neighboring Eswatini. Citizens of Eswatini voted for parliament in the small kingdom on Friday, but in a country where political parties are prohibited from participating, pro-democracy activists labeled the poll illegal. Darren Taylor reports.
Thousands of Swazis voted for leaders of Tinkundlas, or tribal communities, to go to parliament. But many thousands stayed away from the polls in protest against what they call an undemocratic, repressive system of government. In Eswatini, political parties aren't allowed to campaign. Only individual candidates are permitted to stand for election to the House of Assembly. This is true democracy, says government spokesman Alpheus Nkomalo.
There is no law in this country that bans political parties to participate in our elections. That is if they do so as individuals. Members of political parties are not banned from participating in these elections and any other elections. And right now, as we talk, we are waiting for a swearing in of new members of parliament, some of them members of political parties like Mage Masimelane.
Pro-democracy activists argue that new MPs are always friendly to the king and never representative of a real opposition. The real opposition, they say, is in exile, fearing for their lives. Many of King Mswati's opponents have been assassinated and jailed in recent years, and his security forces have met protests against his rule with deadly force. Nkumalo says the king's police, soldiers and judiciary only act against criminals who incite violence. He insists that unknown terrorists are murdering many people in Eswatini, including tribal chiefs loyal to the king.
We still have got somebody who is going to be standing for trial in the country very soon, who was calling himself a commander, directing his forces from the Republic of South Africa, using the soil of the Republic of South Africa to launch his aggression, his killings and his murders into the soil of the Kingdom of Eswatini.
But South African opposition party MP Julius Malema says it's a false narrative to blame mysterious foreign-based forces for turmoil in Eswatini. He told media in Northwest Province he'll be pushing President Cyril Ramaphosa to pressure Mswati for democratic reform in Eswatini.
It's a joke. It's a mockery of democracy. There are no elections in Eswatini. What the king is doing is really undermining the will of the people. The political parties must be allowed to contest for political power. We want a democratic Swaziland. And we are going to continue to support the struggle of the people of Swaziland for democracy to take place in Swaziland.
The system that doesn't allow political movements to contest elections as parties allows King Mswati to hand-pick individuals, including relatives, for senior positions in government. And this he's set to do again. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi confirmed yesterday that he will run for a third term in December's election. Ahmed al-Tantawi, the most prominent potential opponent to Sisi, has complained that citizens have been impeded when they try to support his candidacy. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the Egypt-Japan University in Alexandria, discussed the election with VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shanawi.
Politics in the Middle East are usually behind a strong one-man show who stays in power for a long time, whether this is a monarchy or a republic. There was no surprise in this announcement, taking into consideration this long political tradition in the area, including Egypt. So nobody had been shocked, nobody was surprised. And so this is a continuation of a tradition and a political culture in the area with that idea that the incumbent president stays on for a long time and he can only be removed either through divine intervention, revolution, military coup, assassination, but not through the ballot box. So no surprise here.
Well, President Sisi told the Egyptian people if they wanted to replace him, the ballot box is the way. The campaign of Ahmed al-Tantawi, a former member of the parliament and the most prominent potential opponent to Sisi, has complained that citizens have been impeded when they try to register their support for his candidacy. Egyptian National Election Authority has called such allegations baseless. How do you explain this discrepancy?
Historically, since the establishment of the Egyptian Republic 1953, the political culture and the state remained biased toward backing any incumbent head of state, and they are not positive or responsive to any rival candidate. There is no surprise here unless the state becomes neutral toward all candidates and absorbs the idea that an incumbent head of state or president can lose through free and fair elections. So far, this cultural change has not happened. And that's why you are seeing they say one thing, but on the ground, something else takes place.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi warned that his country could face weeks of unrest from 100,000 people in difficult economic circumstances and said, imagine if I give each one £1,000, a pack of narcotics and tramadol, they can cause turmoil with a cost of only $30 million. What was the purpose of this strange warning and how was it received among Egyptians?
As you know, improvising and not reading a written speech is very much characteristic of speeches made by President Sisi. And this always causes a lot of confusion, misunderstanding, and speculations. That's why even some of his spin doctors became apologetics and even slightly criticized it. Such statements, and even some state-run media removed them from their sites. Why? Because these statements are open for wild interpretations. As you know, the presidential election was not scheduled to be held so early, but in the middle of next year. It was advanced because the Egyptian government is obliged to carry out some difficult, certainly unpopular economic decisions in agreement with the IMF. That may affect the currency and food prices. So the statement by Sisi may have been a forewarning against any future potential riots and disorders related to food prices, I believe.
That was Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the Egypt-Japan University. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed al-Shanawi. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.